Recording by Tom Weiss. The Masquerader by Catherine Cecil Thurston. Chapter 1. Two incidents, widely different in character yet bound together by results, marked the night of January the 23rd. On that night the blackest fog within a 4 years memory fell upon certain portions of London, and also on that night came the first announcement of the border risings against the Persian government in the province of Khorasan, the announcement that speculated upon, even smiled at the time, assumed such significance in the light of after-events. At 8 o'clock the news spread through the House of Commons, but at 9 men in the inner lobbies were gossiping, not so much upon how far Russia, while ostensibly upholding the Shah, had pulled the strings by which the insurgents danced, as upon the manner in which the St. George's Gazette, the Tory evening newspaper, had seized upon the incident and shaken it in the faces of the government. More than once before, Blakely, the owner and editor of the St. George's, had stepped outside the decorous circle of tradition and taken a plunge into modern journalism, but tonight he essayed deeper waters than before, and under an almost sensational heading declared that in this apparently innocent border rising, we had less an outcome of mere racial antagonism than a first faint index of a long-cherished Russian scheme growing to a gradual maturity under the drift policy of the present British government. The effect produced by this pronouncement, if strong, was varied. Members of the opposition saw, or thought they saw, a reflection of it in the smiling unconcern on the ministerial benches, and the government had an uneasy sense that behind a newly kindled interest on the other side of the house lay some mysterious scenting of battle from afar off. But though these impressions ran like electricity through the atmosphere, nothing tangible marked their passage, and the ordinary business of the house proceeded until 11:30, when an adjournment was moved. The first man to hurry from his place was John Chilcote, member for East Wark. He passed out of the house quickly, with the half-furtive quickness that marks a self-absorbed man, and as he passed the policeman standing stolidly under the arched doorway of the big courtyard, he swerved a little, as if startled out of his thoughts. He realized his swerve almost before it was accomplished, and pulled himself together with nervous irritability. "Foggy night, constables," he said with elaborate carelessness. "Foggy night, sir, and thickening up west," responded the man. "Ah, indeed." Chilcote's answer was absent. The constable's cheery voice jarred on him, and for the second time he was conscious of senseless irritation. Without a further glance at the man, he slipped out into the courtyard and turned towards the main gate. At the gateway, two cab lamps showed through the mist of shifting fog like the eyes of a great cat, and the familiar "Hansom, sir?" came to him indistinctly. He paused by force of custom, and stepping forward had almost touched the open door when a new impulse caused him to draw back. "No," he said hurriedly, "no, I'll walk." The cabman muttered, lashed his horse, and with a clatter of hoofs and harness wheeled away, while Chilcote, still with uncertain hastiness, crossed the road in the direction of Whitehall. About the abbey the fog had partially lifted, and in the railed garden that faces the Houses of Parliament the statues were visible in a spectral way. But Chilcote's glance was unstable and indifferent. He skirted the railings heedlessly, and crossing the road with the speed of long familiarity, gained Whitehall on the left-hand side. There the fog had dropped, and looking upwards towards Trafalgar Square, it seemed that the chain of lamps extended little farther than the Horse Guards, and that beyond lay nothing. Unconscious of this capricious alternation between darkness and light, Chilcote continued his course. To a close observer the manner of his going had both interest and suggestion, for though he walked on, apparently self-engrossed, yet at every dozen steps he started at some sound or some touch, like a man whose nervous system is painfully overstrung. Maintaining his haste, he went deliberately forward, oblivious of the fact that at each step the curtain of